This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The biggest killer out there is not a virus or TB or AIDS or anything. The biggest killer out there is poverty.
That's the chief economist for South Africa's Efficient Group on the potential impact of the new COVID variant, Omicron, on the country's already battered economy. Details coming up. Also tomorrow, voters in the Gambia will select their next leader. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called travel restrictions imposed on southern African countries by close to 50 nations travel apartheid. Speaking at a news conference after the 5th United Nations and African Union conference, Guterres and AU Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki denounced the restrictions that are aimed at preventing the spread of Omicron, the new COVID-19 variant. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shanawi spoke with Ahmed Fatih, a UN correspondent and global affairs analyst, about Guterres's sharp criticism of the international community, the background of the travel restrictions decision, and how long they may be around.
First, the Secretary General was expressing frustration, so as the chairperson of the African Commission at the African Union Commission. There is a sense and a strong feeling in many African countries that they have been discriminated against, that the measure was punitive in the case of South Africa, although they have shared in great transparency their findings immediately. The feeling of being betrayed by the allies, not just the United States, but the European Union. And there is almost 50 countries that have imposed travel restrictions. The second point is that the American and the European view has been focused, and this has been neglected by many of the media outlets, was that the United States is not punishing South Africa. The United States is buying time. Its health system gets clogged with overflow of cases. Till now, there is a great deal of uncertainty and lack of scientific data to tell us how this new variant is evolving and developing, since what we know so far is that it's fastly spread. There was no mention in the afore of all the commentaries and the interjections I've heard over the past 4 days mentioning anything about the 600 passengers who were on board two flights heading to Schiphol in the Netherlands. And when they landed, they had to be immediately tested and quarantined for some of them. They found 61 positive cases among the 600 passengers, although they had to submit a form of testing before they can board the plane. So this is number two. There was no even approach. The other point is that there is no time frame. Although the European Union, when they first introduced the ban, it was for a period of 2 weeks. The United States and the UK followed suit in that direction. The other countries are not sure what the criteria. Some countries resolved to close its border entirely, like Japan, Israel, and Morocco. But where we are heading with this direction, that is going to be dependent on what the data will be in our hand within the next 10 days or so.
Vaccine equity was another topic that is receiving great attention from both chiefs of the UN and African Union, where to date only 6% of Africans have received one sort or another of vaccination. How can this current situation be fixed in the short and medium terms to bring more vaccines into the African continent?
The developed world, and namely starting from the G20 summit last June in the United Kingdom, have pledged to provide in excess of 2 billion doses of vaccine. The United States on its own pledge 1 billion doses. This was by the time when we were only getting two shots of vaccine. So it can vaccinate 500 people just as a gift from one country. The problem with the vaccine distribution is that there is, in many countries, there is no infrastructure, there is no trained personnel to administer the vaccine, and there is no storage facility. So even if you have availability of vaccine, you cannot even deliver it to them. In the case of South Africa, for example, South Africa enjoys one of the highest vaccination rates in the continent, which reach about 25% of its population. There is also a resentment from South Africa to receive more vaccine. Last shipment they received from the United States, totaling over the past few weeks, 8 million doses. They have not requested any more vaccine to administer because they have not yet fully administered the 8 million doses. That's only from one country. The United States provides vaccination much bigger than the entire world combined is providing to the least developed countries. So there is not even an equity in the developed versus the least developed. You can have vaccination, but if you don't have the infrastructure, then it becomes redundant at some point. There is a trend now going into starting manufacturing the vaccine in Africa. This is not going to be with an immediate outcome because it will take investments and time to finish from construction. So it will depend at the end on what's the capabilities of the factories, the pharmaceutical company, to keep on producing vaccines.
That was Ahmed Fatih, a UN correspondent and global affairs analyst, speaking with my colleague, Mohammed Al-Shinawi. According to experts, the sudden travel bans imposed on South Africa in the past week over the Omicron variant of coronavirus have dealt a blow to an already struggling economy. The jobless rate is creeping towards half the population, and the lost tourism this month will have a far-reaching impact extending beyond the travel sector. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
The Hector Peterson Memorial and Museum at the center of the apartheid struggle in South Africa is normally bustling with tourists. Since the recent discovery of the Omicron coronavirus variant, foreign tourists have vanished. Britain was the first to halt flights to South Africa, with the United States and other countries quickly following suit. People working in the tourism industry say panic over the new variant is decimating business, just as travel was starting to pick up over the past 2 months. Wayne Barnes is a sales manager with Mo Africa Tours.
When the UK actually opened up and took us off their red list, we started to see an increase of numbers from travellers from all around the world started to support us again. So their decisions is definitely affecting, you know, everybody around the world on their decisions.
And the decision blindsided many. Barnes says his company lost over $30,000 to refunds in just 1 day for cancelled December bookings. Tour guides like Tabanga Molea went from leading groups of over 40 people last week to no one today.
I'm very hurt at the moment, namely because things were starting to look like we're starting to be working normally, that which will remind us of a life before COVID.
It's not just the tourism industry that's hurting. From vehicle suppliers to website developers, the collapse of travel is having a domino effect across the economy. Nearly 47% of South Africans were jobless last quarter, according to government statistics released this week. It's a bleak landscape for parents and breadwinners like Tabanga Molea, who are again facing layoffs.
At some point, I wanted to come up with an idea of what one can do. Also, it was not easy for one to find a new job, but just hoping and believing that one day one will work again, the world will travel again.
But economists say recovery is years away, and locking down will only slow that recovery and make life harder for the poorest. Davi Root is chief economist for the Efficient Group in Pretoria.
The biggest killer out there is not a virus or TB or AIDS or anything. The biggest killer out there is poverty. It might be necessary to prevent larger crowds to get together and things like that, but it's not necessarily necessary to stop airlines from flying and to necessarily stop people from going. Stay at home, not go to work, or stay at home and not go to the factory, something, things like that.
For those who have managed to cling to their jobs, like Johannesburg Tourism Ambassador Mbali Ngema, the situation still feels demoralizing.
Before, you used to have that thing of waking up in the morning to say, I'm going to work, I'm going to see new people, I'm going to meet new people. But due to this, you just wake up and you sit and you do nothing.
Until scientists better understand the Omicron variant and politicians change their views on travel, South Africans will have to continue waiting for normal life to return. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa has been on a state visit to West Africa, notably Nigeria. The two countries, widely regarded as the continent's economic powerhouses, have concluded 32 agreements. Vicky Stark spoke to political analyst Dr. Sifa Mandla Zondi, who is with the Department of Politics and International Relations at the University of Johannesburg.
Zondi thinks it's long overdue that South Africa rejig its Africa policy, which has been neglected in recent years. He says South Africa has identified countries that are hubs in various regions of the continent and uses them as a springboard to expand trade, investment and peace building.
And of course, Nigeria on one hand and Cote d'Ivoire on the other are considered such. If not Cote d'Ivoire, it would be Senegal. Are considered such hubs through which South Africa reaches out to the region. It is under pressure to help its multinational corporations, such as those that are in the mining sector, in the telecommunications sector, to gain a foothold in these regions at a time when the country has been hit hard by the COVID-19, especially in economic terms.
He says while the relationship between the two countries has always been seen as solid, it requires constant work.
They have a structured format by which it is managed, which is called the Binational Commission, that's at quite high level. And it's a relationship that perhaps is one of the most productive in economic terms for South Africa. Huge investment in Nigeria. Not quite reciprocal because we don't have quite a lot of Nigerian investments in South Africa.
He says, like all emerging powers, they also have to compete for investment from elsewhere, and they compete for investment opportunities in Africa.
And that can lead to friction from time to time, and that has to be managed through this binational commission by keeping the relationship strong. It's not the immediate benefits, the actual agreement signed now, but it is the long-term management of the relationship and the signing of the agreements that were done with that high level, kind of summiting of a process that we have started 4-3 years ago. The officials continue then to do work on further things that the politicians will then sign again in the years to come.
Ramaphosa's visit to West Africa came amidst travel bans imposed on several Southern Africa countries. This followed South African scientists announcing the discovery of a new coronavirus variant called Omicron. Zondi says besides Rwanda, no other country on the continent has imposed travel bans against the South. He maintains that while COVID is harmful, travel bans cause widespread economic damage. Ramaphosa thanked the heads of state of his host countries for allowing the state visits to go ahead despite the bans. This is Vicky Stark for VOA News in Cape Town.
Tomorrow, voters in The Gambia will select their next leader in the first presidential election since the 2016 defeat of longtime strongman Yahya Jammeh. The top three candidates are incumbent President Adama Barrow, Osainu Darbo, a former vice president and foreign minister under Barrow, and Mama Kande, a longtime member of parliament and the third place candidate in the 2016 election. Reporter Modu S. Juf in Banjul gives VOA's Kate Pound Dawson a look at the candidates and at Jammeh, who still looms large in Gambian politics from exile in Equatorial Guinea.
Adama Barrow is 56 years old. He won the last presidential election with 43% of the votes, with the backing of seven political parties. This election was enforced after West African leaders decided to send Senegalese soldiers and Nigerian fighter jets to the capital after his predecessor, Yahya Jammeh, disputed the result. Barrow is running for re-election despite an earlier promise to step down after 3 years. We have Osainu Darbo, who is leader of the United Democratic Party. Darbo is Barrow's main rival, and he is 73 years old. Darbo participated in four elections under Jammeh, and he was Jammeh's main rival. In 1996, 2001, 2006, and 2011, he lost presidential election to Yahya Jammeh. Though some of those elections were disputed, and at some point he has challenged the results of such elections. He was a vice president under Adama Barrow between 2017 and 2019. He also served briefly as foreign affairs minister, but he fell out with Adama Barrow after the two couldn't agree on issues of term limits and how they could work together. Barrow also felt that Dabo was interested in being president, so he saw the need to sack him from his government because they could no longer work together. Mama Kande, who is the third presidential candidate, who is among the leading runners in this election, was a former National Assembly member under Yahya Jammeh's regime. Kande is now being backed by Yahya Jammeh in this year's elections, after Jammeh rejected a proposal by President Adama Barrow to form an alliance with his APRC party. Kande, during the course of the campaign, offered Yahya Jammeh a platform to speak to supporters via telephone, addressing political rallies.
Well, that leads me to my next question then. Mr. Jammeh obviously is not a candidate in this election, but he does seem to factor into it. Is there still support in the country for his party and for the government he had?
Yes, Yahya Jammeh still commands a great deal of respect from his supporters, and he still has a good number of supporters in the country. During the course of this election, when his own party, the current leaders of his own party, decided to sign an agreement, an alliance agreement with President Adama Barrow, Jammeh rejected that agreement. And then people who are supporting him in his party split from his party, and they've gone on to join one of the presidential candidates, Mama Kande. He's still a great factor in the political arena in the Gambia and still has a lot of influence. And also for the fact that he ruled the country for 22 years. The country is struggling to break away from the past, to leave Jammeh behind, because of there were massive alleged atrocities of human rights violations. Just last week, the Truth, Reconciliation and Reparation Commission of the Gambia, which was set up by President Adama Barrow, delivered its report and made some recommendations. And the report contains a lot of evidences of violations of human rights violations, ranging from murder, extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, torture, and maltreatment of opposition and journalists in the country, and even human rights defenders. So Jammeh still plays a critical part. President Barrow has said he's committed to implementing the recommendations of the Truth Commission, but he has within 1 month to reveal or to make public the report that was submitted to him last week.
That was Gambian journalist Modu S. Juf. He also told VOA's Kate Bond-Dawson that voters in the Gambia have been looking forward to the election, with thousands taking part in political rallies over the past month. He says the main issues for them are justice for crimes allegedly committed by Jammeh's former government, employment, healthcare, and education. Tanzanian-based non-profit social enterprise Ubongo, which is Africa's leading producer of kids' entertainment, has won the 2021 Rotman Innovation of the Year Award worth $10,000 Canadian dollars. The accolade is presented annually by Grand Challenges Canada, a Canadian non-profit organization which invests in local innovations that address critical global health, humanitarian, and indigenous community challenges in Canada and low-resource countries. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
Ubongo was recognized for offering programming that improves child development while using broadcast technology to reach millions of children across sub-Saharan Africa. Himan Lipumba is the head of marketing and communications at Ubongo.
The award really helps build our credibility for the work that we've been doing and the impact that we've had, especially the past year or so during the COVID-19 pandemic, where we amplified our efforts to reach as many kids as possible in Africa with localized educational resources. The attention and recognition that the award has brought, you know, as a nonprofit, that's critical to us and to our survival, and hopefully inspire future generations of kids in Africa to create their own innovations and change their communities in the world.
The award was created in honor of the late Joseph Rotman, founding chair of Grand Challenges Canada, and his family in recognition of their unfailing support for global health innovation. It honors innovation that has had the largest sustainable increase in lives saved or lives improved over the past year. Jocelyn Markey is Grand Challenges Canada Co-Chief Executive Officer.
We have demonstrated outcomes for children using broadcast technology to reach a wide net of children across sub-Saharan Africa. The innovation really embodies what we call integrated innovation, which means that it will be well received by end users so that the innovation has a higher chance of scaling sustainably towards impact.
Markey challenged young innovators in the region to find solutions to local problems affecting the continent. She also appealed to leaders and communities to support and encourage innovation.
My message to governments on the continent is to support those innovators who have incredible ideas and expertise to solve challenges that every country faces, and then to pick up those that are tested and have evidence to embed them in approaches to healthcare or sustainable development for countries.
Lipumba says the prize money will help adapt content to more languages. Our organization is determined to broadcast programming across Africa.
At Ubongo, we use powerful African stories to create and deliver educational entertainment and learning resources to kids across Africa through the technologies they already have. We plan to reach 60 million kids across Africa by 2025 and 100 million kids by 2030. And the challenge there is that there's still many more kids who may not have access to the technologies that we are mostly operating in, which is TV, radio, mobile devices, and print.
Ubongo's flagship Akili and Me programming is currently translated in 9 languages. Since receiving Grand Challenges Canada support in 2018, more than 1 million children in pre-primary and primary schools across Tanzania, Kenya, Rwanda, Nigeria, Uganda, and Ghana have benefited from watching the program. The multimedia platform, the first in Africa to integrate resource caregivers and other stakeholders, is easily accessible through television, radio, and mobile phones. The project aims to bolster the development, learning, and life trajectory of over 100 million children in Africa by 2030. Last year, the inaugural Rotman Innovation of the Year Award went to Hewatele, a Kenyan-owned social enterprise addressing the lack of access to medical-grade oxygen for rural and regional healthcare facilities. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the